Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, on Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. I was looking at back dates, Al. Good afternoon, Al. Are you there, Al?
Yes, I'm here. Some idiot touched my mute button when I wasn't. When I wasn't looking, and they put the microphone on mute without my permission or understanding.
I was thinking it was Frank. It's going to be one of those days.
It was Frank. I'm pretty sure. I think Frank, the producer, snuck over here, and he's the one responsible.
But I was looking at some. I was looking at some back dates for comparisons on $20 gold pieces, and I'm looking at dates at 2010 and 2009 and 2011. And when I got to 2014, it's almost forgot what date it was. Anyway, it was a long explanation on something that just happened to me personally today, but I get to share it with everyone and you.
Well, we'll talk about those kinds of explanations later on in the program.
Yes, we will.
I have an article to discuss. It goes to a recent court ruling involving Google in Europe and whether or not they have to delete information off the Internet. So we'll talk about that.
Well, let's talk about gold today. It struggled today. 1295 on days where you have the Dow and the S&P hitting all-time records again. The S&P is about ready to touch on the 1900 level. And, you know, that was sort of expected. I expected it to hit 1900, but will it go to 2000? So gold today was up, or I should say down a buck and a half currently on the New York spot at 1295. You have silver basically unchanged, up a penny at 1961. But platinum and palladium are overtaking the markets. You have both platinum and palladium over 1%, platinum 1458 and palladium 820, with palladium up a 1.25%. You have the USDX today that is stronger. Finally, it managed to get over the 80 again, 80.12. at 0.25, and crude oil today was up a buck and a quarter at 101.86. So happy days are here again, Al.
That's great. I'm going to get myself a party hat, and I'm going to get one of those horns. Happy days.
Happy days. Yep. And if you're in the stock market, and you know what, folks, I know many of the listeners have paper investments in their 401ks and in their retirements and their pensions and IRAs and everything else. And I'm glad that it's performing well for you. Take advantage of it performing well and pull some of that profit out. Someone told me this weekend, yeah, all the markets are making highs. I'm not, my portfolio isn't changing very much. You could be one of those too, to where you're not getting much of the advancements in your paper investment. So maybe you need to change some things around, but take advantage of the highs, folks, and get it repositioned and protect what you earn. Protect what you have earned. The Dow was up 19 points today at 16,715. The NASDAQ down 13 at 4130. And the S&P up 0.80, but it was enough to get it over for a record high for a second straight day, 1897. You'd think if it was up 0.80 and it was able to make a new record that it's kind of struggling. And I couldn't get over a full point, just 0.80. So interesting.
They do the best they can with what they've got, Melody.
Yes, they.
That's all.
Yes, they do.
Is the stock market half empty or is it half full?
Well, the 10-year yield, I forgot to mention that, that was down a little bit today at 2.62%, down 0.04.
Okay, 0.04. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're kind of running out of gas right there, Melody. Did you?
No, it wasn't. It doesn't have anything to do with gas. It just has everything to do with my voice.
Well, I know you're having a problem with some springtime allergies or whatever, if I understand correctly. The trees.
Trees are blooming.
And that causes you a little bit of difficulty, isn't that right?
Yes, it does.
Mm.
Yes, it does. But I shall live.
I know. But the trees may not. I'll go out there after the program and cut them all down. Perfect. That'll teach them.
Mad woman, Pennsylvania.
Exactly. Assaulting the trees.
Assaulting trees.
Yes. So what's next?
Well, you were going to talk about...
Well, we're going to talk about Google. Talked about... They're just talking... You mentioned that there was a little, I don't even remember what exactly, but you make a little bit of a mistake, and on the internet, it's available to everyone forever. I don't doubt if I look on the internet deep enough, I can probably find copies of my first grade report card, probably up there someplace, and it's not necessarily something I want everyone else to see. So I didn't do that well in first grade. I had to be kept after school. In fact, what happened, I was sick for a while and went on a vacation. Then I got sick and I missed about 6 weeks of first grade. And so Miss Johnson, who I will always be grateful to, she kept me after school for every night, for every afternoon, for an hour or two, for, I don't know, I don't remember anymore, a couple of months. And got me caught up with a class, otherwise I would have probably been held back a grade. So, Miss Johnson, I still remember. Anyway, there's all sorts of information about all of us on the internet. If you look up there, it can be, you know, not only cause for celebration, but sometimes cause for a problem. And here's an article from the Associated Press entitled, A Look at the European Court Ruling on Google. And it involves questions and answers over the European Court ruling on Google and the right to be forgotten. Right? Phrase that actually comes up in this court case, the right to be forgotten. This is coming out of Amsterdam. A European court ruled Tuesday that Google must respond when users complain that searches on their names are turning up personal information they don't want to see available to anyone and everyone. Now, this is a peculiar and spectacular ruling. The ultimate implications of this only applies to Europe. It doesn't apply here in the United States. But we can assume that we're going to see similar litigation in this country. And we can wonder whether the Supreme Court will follow the example of the European Court of Justice or if the Supreme Court will go in a different direction. But this is... this, at least at face, at first look, this is a bad ruling for Google. Because let me go see. They ruled that Google and other search engines must respond to user requests to remove links to personal information that turn up on searches of their name. Now, it doesn't say, this court order does not say that Google must remove those links. But it does say that if I complain, for example, that there's information on the internet about me that I don't want up there, if I make that complaint, they have to at least respond to me and tell me what's going on. As a practical matter, Google will, they can't just draw up a boilerplate response to everyone's complaint. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that. I think they're going to have to make a personal response, one way or another, a unique response to Mr. Jones, another one to Mr. Smith, another one to Ms. Johnson. Each of us is perhaps going to have a personal response. The ruling did not say, we get a response, but the ruling did not say that Google must remove all such links. Just that people can make a complaint, which Google and its peers in the world's internet search have to answer. Now, all by itself, the cost of answering these individual complaints, it could be enormous. Let's suppose that there's information on the internet that I don't want there, and Google doesn't have to remove it, but they do have to respond to my complaints. Well, let's suppose I start deluging them with complaints. I could probably set up an automated complaint process where I send one email after another, after another, after another to Google complaining, and they have to give me some personal response to my complaint. The cost of those responses could be considerable. And particularly, I'm going to guess that in terms of an employee who has to address the complaint and respond to it, I doubt that they can make those complaint responses for less than $5 or $10 each. And when you think about the potential of millions of people complaining, this could be a huge financial burden on search engines like Google and Bing and Yahoo and so on. So in any case, the case started out by a Spaniard seeking to have outdated information about himself removed from the internet. His quest became a key test to the so-called right to be forgotten, to have negative information erased over time. And they had information from 1998, newspaper notice that his property would be auctioned off due to unpaid welfare debt. And like he'd like that, here we are. 15 years later or thereabouts, he'd like that off the record. All right, we don't need to be reminded every time we search that this guy had a problem with the welfare people 15 years ago. So this was the start of this case that ultimately reached the equivalent of our Supreme Court. It's the closest thing to a European Union Supreme Court. The immediate impact will be 200 cases that are pending in the Spanish courts will be decided in the light of the European Court ruling. It's likely there are similar cases in other European countries which may be impacted by this ruling. There is also now a real potential for many more European citizens to exercise their right to challenge search engine results for their name. That is a potential logistical headache for Google. That's the language that's in the report. I suggest that it might be a logistical nightmare for Google, because you get millions of people complaining. Oh, I mean, this is the sort of ruling that, depending if this is sustained, it might be overthrown later on or reevaluated or who knows what's going to happen. But this could cause search engines to be badly impaired. And there's one other side to this also. On the face of it, it appears to be a bad ruling for Google and for search engines. But there's a flip side that might serve them well. If you don't complain, and now you have the right to complain, and if you complain, they have to respond to your complaint. Okay? But if you have the right to complain, you also have the duty to find out if anybody's saying anything about you that probably you don't want. There is a, and the result is that legally, if you don't complain about information that's been turned up about you on the internet, it may be presumed that you have consented to have that personal information displayed on the internet. Now what? Now where's the burden? Now we're caught in a situation where, if it goes that way, you know, this is new legal ground, and what will actually happen remains to be seen. But it's entirely possible that Google will be off the hook if you don't complain, if you don't search on a regular basis to see if there's anything adverse published about you on the internet. Then when the time comes, say, well, I want to sue Google because they published something that was adverse about me, that was unflattering, that was discrediting, adversely impacted my reputation. And Google say, well, we've had it up there for you know, several months, and you never complained about it, so we assumed it was okay with you. So it's hard to say where this is going to go, and the question is, how are we going to deal with these search engines? This is a completely new phenomenon. It's only been around for 10 years or thereabouts. What are we going to do about these, and how do we protect people's privacy, or can we protect people's privacy? And how should courts rule, and what kind of rulings can they enforce? You can make all the rulings you want. What kind of rulings can you enforce? Where do you think we're going with this, Melody? Do you think they'll have an internet report on you having a problem where you couldn't quite get enough air to say forth? I think it was.
Well, I think on some of this stuff, people need to grow a little bit thicker skin. I mean, they're on there dabbling on the internet, buying and selling everything on the internet, exposing everything that they do have. I mean, people, if they want their privacy, they need to start creating their own privacy themselves. So, you know, so I don't know.
Tough to do in this age.
You have people.
You have to maintain privacy.
I mean, you have people who do complaints and reviews and everything else. So if an ex puts something on the internet about you that discredits you, well, you know, it's, I don't know.
We can explain. Listen, that was my ex-wife that said that. You understand? And people say, "Oh, the ex-wife."
Well, or ex-husband.
We don't have to pay attention to that. But what if it's your current spouse? Then what?
But I mean, I don't think, you know. I mean, and anything financially, if he had a problem with the welfare department 15 years ago, it's hard to find information going back 15 years ago. You have to be actively searching for it. It just doesn't pop up on the first page when you Google anything. You do have to go back many, many pages, and because when I'm researching articles, yeah.
Let me give you an example.
So just get a thicker skin and get over it, or don't be involved on the internet. Your choice.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. But in this day and age, how do you do that? That's not easily done. Hard to live today and completely ignore the internet. We'll talk more about this when we return to financial survival in just a moment. I'm Alfred Adask, here with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
The aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to tell the listeners that David Krieger from Hobson NBT was to join us this afternoon. Something came up late in the day in his schedule, so we had to reschedule him, hopefully for next week. So we'll keep you posted on that. I did have a comparison that we had wanted to talk about the $20 gold pieces. Perhaps I will save that for tomorrow. The comparisons that I'm doing, then the numbers are just amazing how well the $20 gold pieces can do when you have the right market. And the dates that I went back to was December 1st, 2009. Spot gold was $1,193, and you had Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces selling for over $2,000. And we saw the same thing with Mint State 64 $20 Liberties. The same date, they were priced at $3,800. Today, they're priced at $1,995. So, I mean, what a terrific potential. They were selling for over $2,600 above the spot gold price compared to today at $695. You buy low, you sell high. Most people will focus, well, gee, that really dropped. Well, yeah, to have that type of a drop, you have to have that type of an increase. And that's the whole point in the fear-driven market. That's when these coins just do incredible, incredible numbers to the upside. Mint State 65 St. Gaudens. At that time, they were $2,900. Today, they're $2,200. But what's interesting, 1 year ago, they were selling for $2,180. Spot gold at that time was $1,400. So with a drop in spot gold of $133 from a year ago today, they actually went up $100. So you can also have these type of coins, the $20 gold pieces, the semi-numismatics, they can actually rise when the spot price decreases. So they certainly do provide for a lot of areas in a portfolio. Many you know, you hear all the negative promotions on $20 gold pieces. What, there's nothing wrong with the coins. What is wrong is these people, their lack of understanding of the gold market and or their own personal agenda gets in the way of being objective, and therefore they're unable to truly advise people properly as to what type of coins they should buy. It's much easier just to say, don't do this, don't do this, but do this. Latin, less information, less explanations, less education. And to me, that's not the way to treat customers. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. We'll go a little bit more into detail in these examples. They will also be posted in the next week's newsletter. And again, these examples show that in fear-driven markets, the older coins perform much greater than bullion prices. When markets are driven by paper, you do have a tendency to have the prices correct. Semi-numismatic and numismatic coins can also rise as spot markets decline. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter, and this comparison and examples will be in that newsletter. We'll talk about this a little bit later on in the week as I bring up more details, but it's a very interesting comparison. And again, get your portfolios diversified with $20 gold pieces. We've got some great prices on them. You get silver eagles for this month with $20 gold pieces, and we have great prices also on silver eagles, $275 over spot. And for volume discounts or for volume orders, we can discount them a little bit more.
I have an article here from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom. The headline is, White House wanted Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner to lie to the public about Social Security being behind the deficit. Now, you've probably heard this. Probably everyone on the program's caught wind. Geithner has a book out. Came out, I think, yesterday.
Talked about it yesterday a little bit.
I don't know. Touched on it a little bit yesterday. But we didn't know what was in it. And there is, according to the Daily Mail, in his memoir out yesterday, former Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says the White House wanted him to mislead Americans about the long-term costs of Social Security. Gasp. I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you. And Geithner is quoted as saying, I objected when Dan Pfeiffer wanted me to say Social Security didn't contribute to the deficit. It wasn't the main driver of our future deficits, but it did contribute, Geithner writes. What a shocker, Melody, huh? Mm. The thing is, the truth of the matter is, it's not that big a deal for God. He objected. Wow. You know, if he threatened to jump off a tall building or something, I'd say, okay, this guy's getting serious. I objected. It's not that big. It's not that, you know, it's not that heroic a deed to object in this instance. But if we can judge by reports that have come out so far, they're preliminary. We don't know. I certainly don't know what's in Geithner's book. But apparently, there have only been a couple of instances when Obama and or his people in his administration wanted Geithner to lie, that Geithner has reported. He's reporting, as far as I understand, one or two times. Now, I don't see anything remarkable about Obama telling Geithner to lie once or twice. I assume that anyone who speaks for the Obama White House is told to lie on a regular basis. One or two lies are no big thing. If that's all we had to deal with from Geithner, if that's all we had to deal with from Obama, got one or two lies over the course of the last 6 years. All right, not that big a problem. For me, from my perspective, we can expect one or two lies per day. All right, not one or two per year or per 6 years. We can expect one or two. So if Geithner wants to write a real bestseller, right, a book where people really want to buy that book and read it, he should report those instances, if any, when President Obama told Geithner to tell the truth. Now that would be, you know, that would be a tell-all book for the markets and for the publications. Says, oh,
oh my gosh, President Obama was telling some of his staff to tell the truth.
That would be a book to read, Melody. Would you buy that book?
Well, little Timmy Geithner, I mean, I mean, he goes and makes speeches in other countries, and they laugh at them. I believe he was giving a talk in front of, was it a Chinese college?
Yeah.
They laugh at him. I've been told by my sources, I've been told by people that I've work in banks and credit card areas that are positions higher than the teller, of course, where, you know, they just believe Timmy Geithner was really a joke. He had no respect in the area of banking and so forth. So I doubt his book is going to be very successful. You'll probably have mainstream people buy it as they watch the CNBCs of the world. And
they may buy it, but will anyone read it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know,
buy it, but
I don't think
if you can get an autographed copy.
I don't think anything that
50 cents for Mr. Geithner's autograph, perhaps.
I don't think anything that Timmy Geithner has anything that will sway people's thoughts of what happened during the crisis one way or another. The only positive, if you call it a positive, is he'll become a multimillionaire over this. He'll make millions of dollars on his book, so you know, and then his speaking gigs, he'll get more money for his speaking gigs so he could talk about his stupid book. But go into politics, get all your benefits, all your perks, you retire, and then you can write a book.
And you never have to read any of your legislation or anything else.
You know,
you can write without ever having to read.
You're right.
I got another one here from Wall Street Journal. And this deal, the headline is, Struggling Malls Suffer When Sears, Penny Leave. Subheadline is, Loss of Anchor Tenants Can Accelerate Downward Spiral. Norfolk, Virginia, with JCPenney Company and Sears Holding Corp. Racing to close stores. America's weakest malls are being pushed to the brink. Nearly half of the 1,050 indoor and open-air malls in the United States have both of those struggling chains as anchor tenants. That's according to real estate research firm Green Street Advisors. Of those malls, nearly 25% are struggling with sales below $300 per square foot and vacancy rates above 20%, meaning they will have a hard time finding new tenants if old ones leave. And what we're talking about, JCPenney and Sears have been anchor tenants on malls. They're the big shower. They're the big store that's at one end of the mall or the other end of the mall. And people go in there. They're the ones that really drive the traffic historically to the mall. And then they go in and then they stop in while they're there. They stop in at the other little stores, smaller stores, and everybody makes a buck off the deal. But turns out that J.P. Penney and Sears are beginning to close more stores. And as they close stores in some of these retail malls, the main attraction to bring people to that mall is now an empty store. And I'm sure all of you have seen it. You've gone to malls. Well, I expect all of you have seen it. You've gone to malls and you look and you see major stores are just empty, and smaller stores are often vacant. And all of us can remember a time, you know, 2007, 2008, when those malls were just wall-to-wall people. Every store front was open and operating and making a profit. And the place was packed, and it was hard to find parking, and you had to walk long way to get into the mall. That's not the truth today. And when we see those abandoned stores, those vacant stores and vacant storefronts, everybody knows that it's not a good sign. There's something happening. Now, the article implies that Sears and JCPenney aren't merely being stressed by the internet, but also by our current economic decline or recession. That's the implication of the article that I was reading, one of the implications of the article. So what do you think, Melody? Do you think Sears and JCPenney are being stressed mostly by the internet or mostly by the current economic decline, or are you going to say both? Huh?
Well, I'm going to add one.
Okay, go ahead.
Poor management. I think they certainly should have management that should address their issues. Certainly there is competition, but there's, you know, competition should be good. And certainly I don't see where Sears and Penny's, whether it be their quality, whether it be there has to be reasons why they can't compete. So they must be doing something wrong. I know Penny's has closed a lot of stores. You used to be able to walk up to their catalogs. People still enjoy seeing pictures. I can't remember the last time I received a catalog from Penny's. I prefer catalogs over the internet. You can still order online, but you can have the catalogs to choose your picture, you know, to choose your item. So, no, I think it's a lot of management. They've done a poor job in managing the company, and they're not coming into the new world.
Well, I think the problem, I don't think it's just management. I think the problem is they were committed to bricks and mortar. And the internet has simply created a kind of competition that they can't easily deal with. All right, they can't compete. It's a completely, when people don't have the cost of the brick and mortar and that big rent, they have
a competitive
advantage against stores that have the brick.
All your stores have their brick and mortar stores that have big presence on the internet.
I get that, but it depends on what they're selling. I understand not everybody's going under because of the internet, but nevertheless, I suspect it's made a difference. So I agree with you. I think mismanagement is part of the problem,
mm-hmm.
but they're also changing. Sears can compete against JCPenney because they both have brick and mortar. But Sears cannot compete against the internet very easily, and if they can, they haven't made enough of a switch fast enough in order to maintain that competition. So we'll watch and see what happens. One other point behind this article. It suggests that all retail real estate is likely to suffer a decline in profitability and suffer a decline in price over the course of the next few years. I know that there'll be a lot of exceptions. It won't happen to everything, but there should be a tendency, in part because of the internet, in part because of the declining economy, to just close down stores. I live in the Dallas area, and we have one of the strongest economies in the country. And even so, you drive around and you see these shopping malls, strip centers. And I'll bet you on average they're 20% vacant, maybe more than that. It wasn't that long ago when they were jammed full. Every store was occupied. And now I'll bet you at least 20% on average are not. And in one of the strongest economies in the country, that's not a good sign. That's a bad sign. It's bad for business. It's bad for the economy. And it's bad for anyone who wants to invest in retail real estate. It's at least, you know, there'll be good stores. There'll be good stores that make lots of money. There'll be good investments out there. But they won't be as good on average as they have been in the past.
I think, too, a lot of these malls, that they have deteriorated so much. They're dark. They're old. They don't have a new facelift. And I think the money of these businesses are naturally putting their funds to internet services and letting their brick-and-mortar stores decline. I think they're probably letting them decline intentionally, but they have leases and with the malls. So they can't just close their doors, so they just don't pay any attention to them. And they're old, they're dirty, they do need facelifts, but I don't think they'll ever receive them.
They understand that they can't compete with the internet, and they're not going to try to build more better bricks in order to do so, and they're just we've got a contract that extends to 2015. We're going to stay till 2015, and then we're going to abandon it, and we're just going to cut bait and move
into the internet.
Into the internet.
Yeah.
We're also going to move more deeply into the music on this program. That means Melody and I got to have to take a break. And you folks get a break, and we'll all be back together in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned. Financial Survival.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, last week we had an article about VP Biden, where there was funds given to a friend of his so he can open up a Porsche dealership in Ukraine. So Biden has a personal interest in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And today it was announced that the youngest son of Vice President Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, has been appointed head of legal affairs at Ukraine's largest private gas producer, a move he said would benefit Ukrainians and the country's economy. Now, how can and why you appoint someone as the head of legal affairs and say that it would benefit Ukrainians and the country's economy? So how does an attorney
from the United States,
yes,
presumably is not fluent in the Ukrainian language?
So
now, that might not be true, but it strikes me as at least unlikely that Hunter Biden has mastered the Ukrainian language before they shipped him over. So what we're talking about now, we're talking about an American attorney, a young guy besides that, who's going to sit there. You know, this is what he's really going to form. He's going to be like a watchdog and try to keep an eye on what's going on over there. They've given him an ostensive job. Here's what we're going to say you're doing. But what he's really doing is making sure that his dad's money in the Porsche dealership is going to be protected. That would be my guess. I won't say that's exclusively true, but there's at least a possibility that it's true.
He says he's joining the board of directors and head of the company's legal unit. As a new member of the board, he believes that his assistant in consulting the company on matters of transparency, corporate governance and responsibility, international expansion, and other priorities will contribute to the economy and benefit the people of Ukraine.
Let's hope that they're every bit as transparent and responsible in Ukraine as the Obama administration is here in the United States.
Burisma is the oil company holdings, produced 11,000 barrels of oil equivalent in 2013 and was planning to increase its production in Ukraine by 35 to 40% this year. That's quite a bit.
You mean 11,000 barrels per day or what?
In 2013.
I mean 11,000 barrels in a year is no big deal exactly.
But they're looking to increase it by 20 to 40%. Mm. And it doesn't matter. There's other things.
I've got an article here. I have an article on Russia and an idea that I think may help to explain what's going on over there. He is from the New York Times, entitled "Russia Keeps Its Distance After Ukraine's Secession Referendums." As most of you know, on Sunday, people in the eastern Ukraine in two of the provinces, at least two of the provinces in eastern Ukraine, had referendums where they voted on whether or not they should remain with the Ukraine or become independent provinces, and then later they would join with Russia. The vote was overwhelmingly, or at least reportedly, was overwhelmingly in favor of secession, becoming independent provinces, breaking free from Ukraine, and then later perhaps joining Russia. Now, the surprise is that Russia has, again, the headline, Russia keeps its distance after those referendums. Let me read a little of the article and I'll give you an idea of theory what might be going on. Russia stopped short on Monday of outright recognition of the contentious referendums organized by separatists in Donetsk and Luhansk, the Russian-speaking provinces of southeast Ukraine, instead using the results to intensify pressure for a negotiated autonomy for those provinces. Russia wants these provinces not merely to vote themselves out of the Ukraine. Russia wants them to negotiate some sort of autonomy with the Ukraine government. Russia's not just saying, oh, hooray, welcome back to Russia, or whatever. They're saying, no, you got to talk to the Ukrainian government. And this is interesting because when the Crimea voted itself out of Ukraine, Russia, within hours, they said, yeah, buddy, come on home. You know, we love you. Breathe in. All right. Now, let's go on with this. The separatist leader of the self-declared People's Republic of Donetsk wasted little time announcing that his province wanted to join Russia. But the question seemed whether Russia was interested. Russia avoided any suggestion that it would react to the results with the same alacrity seen after the Crimean Peninsula referendum in March. Within hours of the vote, President Vladimir Putin declared that Russia was annexing Crimea, part of the southern Ukraine that had once been part of Russia. This time, however, the Kremlin issued a statement saying only that it, quote, respects the will of the population of the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, and that the crisis should be resolved through dialogue between representatives of the Easterners in Ukraine and the national government in Kiev. Now, this is interesting. Russia is trying to avoid further antagonizing Ukraine. They're going out of their way to play nicely. Well, I don't know. It's up to you guys. Don't come. You know, we don't want to get involved here. This seems like a retreat. And it might be explained, you know, they grabbed hold of the Crimea in hours when the opportunity presented itself. These are different circumstances because I don't believe these provinces were part of Russia. No, it's not the same thing. Crimea was, they had a special case there. It created circumstances where Russia could say, yeah, we want Crimea back. These other provinces in Ukraine, this is more shaky, but nevertheless, Russia's apparent retreat might be explained if we considered the original objective behind NATO and the United States and perhaps the European Union in trying to cause an overthrow of the Ukraine government, which they did. Right? They implemented that during the Olympics and tried to set up a government that was favorable to the United States and NATO and perhaps the European Union. Why did they want the Ukraine to be favorable to NATO and the European Union and the United States? And the answer is, they have a plan that they will be able, if they can get into the Ukraine, which is right next to Russia, they are in close proximity to a significant number of intercontinental ballistic missiles located in Russia. And it's possible, in that close proximity, to set up rocket batteries. All right? A collection of anti-ICBM missiles that are lightning fast. All right? And when you think of an ICBM, everyone has seen the missiles when we launch a satellite into space. They ignite it, it sits there, it rumbles, and it slowly moves up off the ground. It takes it a while. That rocket is exerting enormous power, but it takes enormous amount of power to get all that mass moving upwards, and it takes a while before it really starts moving quickly. In those seconds, when the ICBM is moving slowly, it is extraordinarily vulnerable, easily hit. It's not moving hard. It's not moving fast enough to be a hard target, right? It's moving slow. It's like shooting a water buffalo or something. When it's stuck in the mud, the thing is barely moving. You can get them. So if they set up rocket batteries in Ukraine, which is just across the border, essentially, and they keep a tight eye on the ICBMs in Russia, if and when those ICBMs are launched, those small, super-fast missiles in the Ukraine can, bam, fire right across like a rifle shot and hit those ICBMs and stop them from going any further. This is the original idea behind why we want the Ukraine. We want them part of NATO. Now, by infuriating the Ukrainians, Russia may drive the Ukraine into the arms of NATO and or the United States. Now, they've made Ukraine mad with Crimea, but they're going to make them just extraordinarily mad if they try to take these two little provinces in eastern Ukraine. Plus, if Russia invades in order to protect the Russian people in the Ukraine, if the Ukraine government attacks the Russian people and Russia comes back and tries to save them, there is going to be a level of animosity between the Ukraine and Russia that's going to be extraordinary. And under those circumstances, it may be that the Ukrainians are just going to say, well, to heck with you, Russia, we're going to join NATO. And we don't care how many provinces you take out of the East Coast, we're still going to be plenty close to set up these missile batteries where we can knock down your ICBMs. Now, if that theory makes any sense, if that reflects reality, this could explain why Putin has apparently pulled in his horns. He doesn't want to make the Ukrainians any madder than they already are. And it might also explain why we had a question yesterday. One of the listeners emailed a question and wanted to know if there were reports that American commandos, soldiers, special forces, right, were working with the Russian people in eastern Ukraine in order to magnify the problem we're having over there. Well, this makes sense. If the government just wants to cause fury, our government wants to cause fury between Russia and Ukraine, they're going about it just right. Just get this war started. Get some people shot and killed. Blow up some buildings. Blow up a bus with a bunch of school kids on it. The rage will be palpable, and the Ukrainians will say, yes, you can set up your rockets right here on Ukrainian soil. We'll knock down every one of those ICBMs coming out of Russia. And if that were true, then maybe President Putin is not quite the chess master that we've previously supposed. Maybe he's overlooked the possibility of how much rage taking control of Crimea and eastern Ukraine might ultimately inspire. And in the midst of that rage, the Ukrainians may say, okay, NATO, bring your missiles. We'll put them in here. Now, that's just a personal theory on my part. I don't know if it's true or false, but it makes for interesting conjecture. Does it make any sense to you, Melody, or do you think it's... bridge too far.
Well, what happens when Russia asks for its money for gas? The deadline is, did Russia just perhaps sit back and wait?
Maybe they will.
They're a very good
maybe
wait.
They will. We'll watch and see.
I think that's what they're doing. They're just
payoff. I think July 3rd is when Gazprom is saying, you got to pay up by July 3rd or we're going to shut you off.
No, I think it's June.
Is it June 3rd?
I'm pretty sure it's June.
Okay, it might be. Might be. But in any case, the date is approaching.
So I think he's just sitting back, biding his time.
Well, he's biding his time, but he doesn't want those rockets set up on Ukraine. Because if these rockets can knock down his ICBMs while they're just barely getting liftoff and just barely moving, it just nullifies his ICBMs. He didn't want that. I'm sure. I don't know that anyone anticipated things could go this far, and I don't, again, it's just conjecture that I'm advancing. I don't know what's really happening here. But it seems plausible to me. We'll get a better idea when the date rolls around for Ukraine to pay its gas bill. And if Russia, one way or another, says, okay, we're going to give you another month, we're going to give you another 90 days, we're going to give you another 6 months. If they are accommodative to the Ukraine, it'll be a little more evidence to suggest that they don't want those missiles in the Ukraine. They don't want the anti-ICBM missiles in the Ukraine, and they'll do whatever they have to do to play nice and persuade the Ukraine. Let's be buddies. Let's be pals. So, we'll see. Is Putin the chess master? And conversely, a lot of people thought Obama has been playing this from a perspective of a handicapped, low IQ individual. And turns out Obama might be getting lucky on this. I still don't believe he had brains enough to anticipate what might be happening here.
And then we've also talked about Putin and Obama in this together.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, that they're working it and planning it and,
No, I doubt that they're
orchestrating to some degree.
I doubt that they're working together, but who knows what will happen. Politics makes for strange bedfellows and even strange candidates for office. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back mañana. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.